With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Worldwide. Every weight class. It's Lewis Heaton. Whiskey Biner. It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show. Hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. You know what you came for. Yes, indeed. This where you come to get your info. Listen up. Other shows throwing the towel.
It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show. Let's go. In the ring, we throw hands. Octagon elbows. Analytical, critical commentary is necessary. A bevy of opinions, we heavy on the winning. This podcast is due, break down the pay-per-view. For boxing purists, yo, let this man through. We rise right, surprise sight at the prize fight. Hands taped up and gloves tied tight. Ring the bell, want some, get some. Let the chip fall where they may work the George from.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. I'm your host, Abraham Gonzalez. As always, intro music by Lewis Heaton. And the podcast is powered by nyfights.com. Boxing coverage from around the world with an NYC edge. Visit nyfights.com for details. And ProBox TV. ProBox TV is a new boxing streaming service that provides 2 to 3 live events per month. Original documentaries, behind-the-scenes content, along with a podcast that includes boxing greats Paulie Malignaggi, Antonio Tarver, and Roy Jones Jr. Visit ProBoxTV.com for details. All right, we have a great show today. The one and only senior writer from BoxingScene.com, Jake Donovan, is on here. We cover a whole bunch of different things. You're going to really enjoy this one. And I don't think we left any stone unturned. So without further ado, here is my interview with Jake Donovan. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Boxing Rush Hour Show. My next guest is senior writer for BoxingScene.com and VP, BWAA, is the people's champ, I'm going to say, because everybody on Twitter loves this guy. My next guest is Jake Donovan. How you doing?
Hey, man. Such a pleasure to be on here, man. You're doing so many great things. Really honored to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Jake, for saying that. I do really appreciate that. Before we get into any of the boxing stuff, I'm always interested in knowing a little bit about some of the relevant media folks out there that that engage with everybody, and I know that you have some different or variety interesting type of background. So give us a little bit of a bio blast.
Okay, yeah, definitely. So you and I were birthed in the same place, same corner of the world, right? Both come from the Bronx. Yep, straight from the boogie down. So from there, I always joke, it's not a joke, it's kind of sad, but we moved every time the rent was due, basically. So I went from the Bronx to Coney Island, Coney Island to Canarsie, Canarsie to Laurelton, made my way out to Long Island. So I lived in Bethpage, Farmingdale, Amityville, Copaig, Babylon, and then finally made my way down south. I got, not to jump too far ahead. So like yours, thank you for your service. I haven't done it like you, man. More than 2 decades, serving Uncle Sam, man. God bless you, bro. But I did, 3 years in the U.S. Army. Got out, got a job with a company. We did all the printing for Warner Brothers companies. So I worked my way up through that company, and that actually led me to being transferred down to Nashville. So when country music started growing beyond, the South, they wanted someone on site. So they sent me from New York to Nashville. So I worked for them for another 8 years down here. They closed up shop. I was always writing in the meantime. And then, I've just been kind of finding my way ever since then. And, really just growing as a boxing writer. So I still work for an advertising agency now as well. They treat me very well. So juggling 2 full-time jobs, man. It's how it is on the boxing grind, man. We're busier than ever. So it's been tough. But, I'm grateful, man. I've really been able to make a name for myself through boxing, So it's, I always joke if we were like, footballscene.com, it's not like I'm going to be sent to the Super Bowl, So. You know, we're both in a good place, though, man. You know, it's like I said, it's you know, we both get to make a living out of this. So it's, you know, it really is a blessing. So, but that's, you know, the very long road that led me here. I did try to box for a minute, you know, while I was in the Army. I ran up a record of 11-4. I had 4 stoppages. My very last fight, I thought I was fighting a guy that was 9-0. Apparently, my German wasn't as crisp as I thought. The guy was 0-9, never came close to winning, and ran my ass out the ring. So that was, it was at that moment I said, you know what, Jake, you're a better writer than a fighter. Know your place in this sport. So
yeah, was it one of those situations where like what was it like in the movie The Fighter where it says this guy just got off the couch?
Oh right, yeah, basically. Yeah. So the guy did wind up going, he was a journeyman when he went pro, but he did wind up fighting. He was one of those guys that shouldn't have fought for a world title, but he did. So at least I can kind of hang my hat on that. Yeah. So
Now let me ask you this, looking back at Jake as a I don't know if you went in as 18 or 19 or whatever, 18, into the Army, right? 19. So Jake as a 19-year-old in the Army, what was that mindset like, and where were you stationed at?
All right, so I did this is what's funny about, you know, because Lefty and MBO, they went down to Alabama a couple of weeks ago, and it reminded me when I did basic training at Fort McClellan in Anniston, Alabama. So I went straight as this, you know, punk teenager from New York, thinking I knew everything about the world. Meanwhile, I never left New York except for one baseball trip to Florida. Went down south where I heard all sorts of things. I mean, you know, Yankee was the nicest thing they called me. So, I mean, people, like I said, I've always rolled Boricua culture. I am a white boy, but, you know, I never heard the word, you know. Well, they call me wetback down there, because I guess they couldn't figure out what, you know, what to call a Puerto Rican, right? So, even though I'm not, but yes, I've heard that, full wigger and just all sorts of, not, yeah, it was like that. That was a real eye opener being down in Fort McClellan. So that's like in the armpit of Alabama. And wow. Then for AIT, I moved up northern Alabama to Huntsville,
okay,
Alabama. So that was pretty live. That was almost like a college town was growing at the time. And then from there, I went over to Germany. We did a pit stop in Panama. So it was after the conflict, after they finally, you know, did what they had to do. So we went over there for cleanup, went to Germany for a bit. Then when Saudi Arabia Operation Desert Storm broke out, I was there to set up the ammunition stars, you know, the stations and all that. I didn't see a day of combat, neither one, but I do have 2 combat patches. I don't take credit for it though, because, you know, like guys like you, Jamel Herring, and there's a whole lot of people that, you know, seen some stuff that I never have. So, but
I tell you that even though you say that, I still think that you should take credit, because you were in a position where anything could have happened, right? And so, yeah, you know, it being in that position, I don't think a lot of people realize, like, that's a lonely place.
It is, yeah, it really is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just one of, you know, my dad, he, you know, Guy Russell, he passed away more than 3 years ago, but he served in Vietnam, and he was even in a situation, like, they offered him the Purple Heart. He's like, nah, you know what? I accept that. Then I don't go home. He's like, then you get shot and killed for real. So that's, I'm big on karma like that. So
yeah,
I like all that. Right. I got too much respect for the guys who really seen some stuff that, you know, that still stays with them. So
yeah, no, for sure. All right. So, you did the Olympics in 2016, if I'm correct, and in 2020. So how was that experience doing the Olympics? Because I know it seems like it's a lot of work, but if you can kind of give some like wave tops of what it is that you were responsible for doing and how you played a part in it.
Yeah. So to backtrack a little bit on that. So a year before the 2016 Olympics, I started doing like TV stuff, you know, like the research. I was called the historian for, like, when PBC started doing stuff on Bounce TV, NBC Sports Network, Spike, and all that. It was myself, Steve Farhood, Corey Erdman, Marcus Villegas. We were the guys that kind of rotated through all that. So I wound up settling pretty much with NBC Sports and Bounce TV. So with NBC Sports, I built up a very good rapport with the producers, with BJ Flores, with Kenny Rice. And it's funny because a lot of guys on Twitter don't like those two guys, but I got to give both of them a lot of credit, because they would have won, you know, when the producer, David Gibson, one of my favorite TV producers of all time, he asked them, he's like, hey, we need a researcher for, you know, the 2016 Rio. And without hesitation, they both said, Jake's the perfect guy. We need to get him on board. Gibby called me up. And then next thing I knew, I was in Stamford, Connecticut, you know, working with those guys. So that was like, I had just started with Pepsi at the time. So I was like starting to phase out from boxing. I got really burnt out. So I was working with Pepsi, and then I got that phone call, and I had to tell them, I said, look, man, this is, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to do this again. And they were fine with it. They gave me, you know, 3 weeks leave, and it was just something else, man, just to see like the commitment. It's weird because NBC just isn't big on boxing. It's like, they're very big on the storytelling aspect. So just see like the commitment of like just watching hours and hours of fights, and then just to get these 30 minutes on air. It's a fascinating process, but yeah, just getting to work with those guys, seeing these Olympic, you know, just getting to tell all their stories, you know, for 18 days, it was just, it's something I'll never forget. And then, like I said, I didn't think it would ever happen again. And then another producer wound up reaching out for 2020. I was actually supposed to go to, so I'm like, oh man, I finally get to be on site, because Chris Mannix covered 2016 Rio. He decided he really wasn't going to do 2020. I believe he decided he wasn't going to do Tokyo. So I had a chance to go there. Then of course the pandemic hit. So everything was on hold, and then they still said I had a job, but it was going to be back in Stanford. So it was myself, Kenny Rice again, Sean Porter worked this one, and then David Harmon was our producer. He was with HBO, DAZN. He does all sorts of stuff. Another fantastic producer. And it was maddening, man. Just working that, you know, third shift, and like, so I'm working 11 hours plus I'm working my full time job, you know, at my at age. So, yeah, not a lot of sleep, but you know, you got to take advantage of these moments, because they only come around, well, for us, once every 4 years, every 5 years. But I'm hopefully getting to go to Paris. Otherwise, it's probably back to Connecticut for a third trip. But I wouldn't trade it in for anything else in the world, man. It's just such an amazing experience.
Yeah, and I was going to add to that, like, you being in the position you are now, and you seeing the athletes then, and then where they are now, some of them are champions. That's gotta be like an amazing, like, just concept to process that. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Especially like with, like Larissa Shields, it was weird. It's like in 2016, I felt like, okay, she had already won gold. She was like, she had the chance. So there was only one other Olympic gold medals who had won in back-to-back Olympics. And that was at a time when the US was the only one competing. So she's the only American boxer ever in history to win back-to-back gold, you know, in an international competition. But like, she never really became the story of the games. In 2016, it was like, because 2012, we got shut out. You know, the men's team, they didn't win a single medal. So 2016, it was like, okay, now we got a shot to medal, especially as Shakur Stevenson made it further and further. So it was weird that her story kind of got left behind. They tried to push Michaela Mayer, but she got eliminated, I believe, in her second fight in the Olympics. I know she didn't make it to the medal round, but the narrative seemed to be more on Carlos Balderas and his, you know, family, on, you know, of course, Shakur Stevenson, you know, Gary Antoine Russell. So it was just weird seeing that dynamic. But of those guys, like, we all believed, you know, Shakur was going to make it. It was just like kind of a crapshoot, like, who else is going to make it? Carlos Balderas has actually been the biggest. I guess he still has a shot, but we thought he was going to do a lot better than he has so far. But Gary Antoine Russell, it's like, we didn't know, okay, is he just another member of the Russell family? But I think he's turned out to surpass everyone's expectations. So yeah, it was interesting, like, those guys at the time. Michael Connell was obviously the big one because of the whole, you know, sorry to do that on screen, but you know, but yeah, well, so
It's an audio podcast. So it's all right.
Okay, very cool. But it is cool to see the way his career panned out too. So yeah, it's just like I said, it's cool to see that these guys evolved beyond just being a story, that like there was a lot of substance to their careers. So, and we are seeing it in the pros.
All right. Okay. So we're going to just go dive right into it. I want to get into that Stephen Fulton Jr. victory last weekend, right? He put on some type of performance, and you know, I know it was at the same time, like right around the same time as the Devin Haney fight, but mm-hmm. I think that people aren't giving him, as they say today, his flowers, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
This guy, he's fought undefeated guys like back to back to back, the top contenders, champions, and you know, the who's who in that division, and he just keeps winning and look better and better and better. Like, what is your overall thought of Stephen Fulton Jr.'s performance last Saturday?
So I'll put it this way. I was covering the Devin Haney and George Kambosos fight, and I'm watching that fight. You know, I went into that fight thinking, okay, if Devin Haney gives a spectacular, we got to start talking about him pound for pound. I left the night watching that fight, watching Stephen Fulton. I'm like, damn, where do I put Stephen Fulton on this list? Because he is, man. He's just something. There's nothing like when you watch him, it's like, oh my God, this, like, this guy's going to be pound for pound number one, you know, someday. But he just finds this way to, like, even when he doesn't overwhelm guys, like, he just leaves absolutely no doubt against, you know, like you said, there's been, I think it was three or four guys in a row that just had never lost, didn't know how to lose. And he makes it look easy. You know, the Brandon Figueroa fight was a war. That was, I think I had it a draw. I don't know if that's my little bit of bias towards Brandon Figueroa, but he's proven he is the premier 122 pound fighter in the world right now. So way more than MJ. And it was against the guy that Danny Roman was a round or two away from still retaining his title against Ahmed Aliyev. So that very well could have been our undisputed championship right there. So, and you know, like I said, for Danny Roman to come out of that fight, said, yeah, I got my ass kicked. You know, there's no question about it. That tells you all you need to know about Stephen Fulton's performance. He's man, he's just, it's something to him, man. Just it's nice to see him, Jerron Ennis, you know, just this night level of talent coming out. You know, Philly is like this club show, you know, fight town. They do produce these guns, but it's like they don't have these big stars. But those two guys, they really have a chance to really run the tables for years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you touched on the Devin Haney fight. Mm-hmm. It's been like some real like controversy, but it's just been a lot of debate with Devin Haney, right? There's the folks that say this guy, you know, he painted a Picasso, right, on Saturday. But then the others say, yeah, well, it was cool, but, you know, we were kind of halfway falling asleep. And so, you know, he's kind of like stuck in the middle where, you know, he's really good. But, you know, what does he have to do to really like take it to the next level as far as his popularity and his stardom and everything else? Because it just doesn't seem like people are latching on as fast as he would hope.
You know, it's weird. So all throughout fight week, like I just saw this look on Devin Haney. Like I went out, and I said, I haven't seen this in a long, long time. Like he's just going to tear through George Campbell. So I went on record saying I thought he was going to knock him out in like 10, maybe 11 rounds. I didn't think George was going to make it to the final bell. I have this weird theory that Bill Haney is an incredible guy. I have all the admiration in the world for him, but I just feel like there's this almost like, okay, Dev, you're in control. It's going to be, I don't know if it's his instructions or just Devin's mindset, but like something about it just seems to be like a safety first approach, you know, kind of like he put on a masterpiece, but it was almost like he was content with putting on a 11-1, 12-0 masterpiece. Whereas like, it did feel like maybe there was an opportunity to knock him out. But he made George look silly. You know, George was the guy who he took the titles from Teofimo Lopez. He deserved that decision. That never should have been a split decision. But, you know, it's about head judging is still something we're working on. But, you know, he was the legitimate champ. And Devin Haney went in there and schooled a legitimate champ. You know, he made it look easy. So he deserves all the credit. And I think we just have to accept he is this masterclass boxer. So he has power. We saw it in the Jojo Diaz, right? You know, maybe it was just a better style matchup. Like Jojo kept coming to win all 12 rounds. Maybe he's just better than George Kambosos and was able to push Devin Haney to that point where he had to, you know, bite down and fight back. But he left no doubt in that fight either. That was it was a competitive fight, but there was no doubt absolutely, you know, in the end that Devin Haney won that fight. So and, you know, Jojo Diaz even gave him that credit. So I think here he just realized he could just school, you know, George Kambosos, and he did. So I'm not going to say he settled. I don't think that's fair to him. He fought the fight he had to do. Hey,
Sometimes I feel like, you know, Devin Haney gives me Demetrius Andrade kind of vibes, right? Because Andrade, he's a really good boxer and fighter. But sometimes it's like, dude, like you could have taken this guy out, but instead you just, you know, take him to the 12 rounds and win the unanimous decision. And so I don't know if he falls into that same kind of like lane with where people might not want to fight him or give him the big fights, and maybe just wait him out and just say, okay, well, he'll be at 140 soon and then we'll just go fight for the rest of the belts.
Yeah, I can't see a lot of lightweights that are going to get to that point. I guess it's kind of a fair comparison to Andre. I think Andre more so, he just for some reason gets bored in the ring really quickly. He starts off strong and then he's just like, you know, it becomes just a Demetrius Andrade fight. But Devin, I think, has a lot more awareness. I think he's much more focused. But, you know, we saw that in the Linares fight. And especially I was there ringside for the Uriorkis Gamboa fight. That was not, you know, he schooled him, but it was like, come on, dude. Like, there's only three reporters here, you know, and a couple of his supporters. Like, just knock this guy out. Listen. And on night, man, we're stuck in a hotel. It was still during the pandemic. So.
Yeah.
But I get that. But yeah, it just does seem like, you know, he's this young, hungry, you know, lion that he should be capable, maybe a little bit. We know he has that power, but, yeah. You know, I haven't seen him, like, especially, I won't say that he coasted against Kambosos. I'm not going to give people, yeah, you know, that kind of credit.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. All right. So going from that to Monster versus The Flash, right? Inoue versus Donaire 2. Now, I thought for sure that, you know, Donaire was going to, it was going to go the distance and it was going to be one of those type of fights. You know, the odds obviously were leaning more towards Inoue KO, but that's probably the Japanese community like slamming the odds, you know, and slanting them that way. But anyway, came out, it was interesting. He said something. He said when he got hit with that left hook, I think it was in the second round, he said it woke him up.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I was like, well, I think he realized that if he didn't get Nonito out of there quick, it was gonna potentially end bad for him. So incredible display of power and speed and shifting by Inoue. Like a lot of people are putting him at the number one pound for pound, but like, what was your overall assessment of Inoue and how he just like a manhandled Donaire?
Yeah, so to your point, someone asked me on Twitter, like, I think I wrote a tweet about the fight that, you know, he just absolutely demolished Nonito Donaire, who's one of my top five all-time favorite fighters. It did kind of hurt me. I like Inoue a lot, but Nonito is just, I'm very good friends with him, very good friends with Rachel. So it kind of hurt me to see that. But, you know, just to see him react the way he did made me feel better. But getting back to Inoue, someone asked me, like, Jake, is he in your top five? I'm like, dude, he's in my top one. Like I had just submitted my, for whatever reason, they asked for a pound-for-pound list after, you know, Saturday. They said, can you get it in by Monday? So I said, all right, you know, let me do it. As soon as that fight was over, I said, dude, I have to resubmit this. I said, we haven't published this yet. Inoue is number one. There is now a gap between Inoue and number two, as far as I'm concerned. He reminded, Cliff Rold and I have been on this, on him for the longest time. Like, really, I've watched every fight from his pro debut. I was like, you know, one of those guys watching these, I'm not going to say how I watched it. I was able to watch these fights back before, you know, we were able to watch it on his own and legal streams. But yeah, just from winning his first world title in a six pro fight, running, you know, beating the number one guy at 108, beating the number one guy, you know, beating all Ronald Reyes at 115, and then just storming through 118 pounds, his third weight division, and he's doing this stuff. He's just something special. Someone made this comparison too. It was after the Canelo Callum Smith fight, where, you know, Canelo, he busted up Callum's, you know, biceps and let him go 12 rounds. I said, the difference between him, so it wasn't me. Someone else said this. There's a difference between Canelo and Inoue is that Inoue knocks out his Callum Smiths. Like, the, you know, obviously referencing his first fight at bantamweight, he knocked, you know, destroyed Jamie McDonald in, you know, I think 90 seconds or whatever. Then tore through Payano, another one of my, he's beaten all my favorite fighters here. But yeah, this guy is just, he's been something special for a very long time. And the thing, you know, it was a great point that you mentioned too, that, you know, he respected the power of Nonito Donaire. He needed the threat to remind the world just how special he is.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't getting it with the Michael Desmarinas's and the Aaron Depeyans. And so he needed this rematch with Nonito to remind us that he's the best fighter in the world right now.
Yeah. And moving on, quick plug, Hall of Fame weekend, Canastota, New York. If you can make it out there. There's a laundry list of inductees this year. It's crazy. But, you know, Miguel Cotto was out there signing autographs today and all that. So if you can get out there, Showbox is running a card. O'Shea Jones is making her pro debut. Speaking of Olympics. So that's going to be interesting there. Jumping right into Saturday real quick. Jaime Munguia, Jimmy Kelly. Now, Jaime Munguia is, you know, I spoke to him and I gave him the business a little bit. And, you know, he was, you know, he didn't catch an attitude like that. You know, he understood that the people were already, you know, kind of frustrated. They're at that point, right? And so he's fighting Jimmy Kelly at 165. Should we even expect anything out of this one?
I'd be very surprised if it's compared. And it's no disrespect to Jimmy Kilrain Kelly, but I liked Jimmy's attitude. He knows everyone's counting against him. And he even said, he's like, you know, for all those who aren't giving me a chance, you know, F them. And he's like, I like that, man. It's, you know, he's going in with this me against the world attitude, but I think the world's going to win this one out. But I'm sure you can test this too. I'm sure you've interviewed Munguia several times. He's one of those guys. I mean, he's another one of my favorite fighters. He's just such a nice guy. It's like you hate to have to hate on him, you know, for these fights. You know what? It's not his fault, though. It's like, and then I keep going back. I remind people, it's like he agreed to the Charlo fight. Charlo agreed to fight him. They agreed on the money. They agreed on the weight. He agreed to go to Houston. He agreed to fight on, you know, all these things like it. All these things that should make a fight, and then it still didn't happen. I felt that like Munguia is the one who suffered the most out of this because Charlo's career is going to roll on, but you know Munguia is going to catch the hate, even though it was, you know, Golden Boy and Zanford are the ones who just completely reshuffled the deck at the wrong time. So I'm always going to support his career regardless, and he knows that everyone expects more.
Yeah.
So I think he's been very honest. You know, he was very honest with me and pretty much everyone I've seen, you know, your story, Jeremy Herridge's sort of story. He's been very honest with the media. He knows that, you know, people aren't big on this fight. The bigger fights have to come. Someone's got to rein in Oscar and, you know, Zanfer has to, you know, maybe take the lead as well and realize, look, this guy does big numbers for the zone. He did big numbers on HBO. He's become the zone, one of the biggest draws on the zone as well. So there's something there. And he has the talent, man. You just, you got to let him loose at some point.
And I'm thinking, you know, in the back of my mind, and I'm trying to kind of connect the dots here. I'm thinking he beats Jimmy Kelly. They upgrade Janabek, and right. we get Janabek Mungi at the end of the year. Janabek, he's a champ, but I don't think that Top Rank wouldn't mind sending him over to the zone, being that that Jaime Munguia's popularity is a little bigger, right? And so there's probably more money there, and in hopes that he brings the title back to ESPN.
That's not a bad theory. The issue is obviously, you know, that fight was in play once. He could afford a financial. Maybe he is holding out for something bigger. Maybe he wants, you know, once they get to that, you know, once he gets through this weekend, it's okay, maybe now we do have the, you know, the full title. The problem with Janabek, they have to wait until November, unless Andre just completely decides, you know what, I'm not fighting this guy, you know, you can have my title now. But I don't see him doing anyone that favor. So, you know, it's unfortunate for Jaime because he's back to being stuck in this holding pattern. So maybe he, you know, I know the Charlo fight with Selesky will probably get rescheduled. I really hope it doesn't, to be honest, because then I would like to see Charlo say, you know what, screw it. Let's just try to go back there. But how do you do it? It's like, how do you get Oscar to come to his senses? He's walking around saying he got a, you know, 10-figure offer to sell Golden Boy. And then he's saying, Al Haymon is the problem. All these guys are hiding behind Al Haymon.
Then he's saying, Ryan and Tang, 50-50.
Yeah, Tang's hiding behind Al. Jamal's hiding behind Al. It's like, he can't make any of these fights. It's like, dude, at some point, you got to realize you're the common denominator. So, but it's unfortunate. You know, Jaime Munguia should not be used as a pawn in this vicious chess game.
All right. So, you know, but before I get into this other fight, I heard something about, and I don't know if you can, you know, maybe add to it, that Fox is going to be coming back with some shows in the summer. Have you heard something like that?
I keep hearing rumors. I'm getting the sense we're just going to see pay-per-views for the time being. Maybe like an occasional FS1 show. I think with Fox, it's like we'll get a show on Fox Prime. It's going to be like, you know, a lead into a pay-per-view event. They were supposed to do. I would have more hopes on Fox making a full comeback if we saw a July 16th date, which we're not going to. That was a big letdown when I found that out. Because I remember I heard, so when I was in Glendale, actually, I can say it now, that I was told directly that Jose Benavides was going to fight Danny Garcia. I just couldn't figure out what network, you know, because Showtime was kind of iffy on it at first. I says, damn, maybe that's going to be July 16th on Fox. Yeah. And then I, you know, everyone's like, well, we got this Fox date. We don't know what's going on. So maybe Caleb Plant fight is going on there. And then, like I said, once the fight got announced for July 30th, and they went back and asked about Caleb, and they're like, we don't know what's going on with that fight. So I just don't know what's going on with Fox. And it's unfortunate. You know, anytime you have a major platform like that, that just decides they're not going to be in the game anymore. It's just, it kind of hurts the sport. We're on this great run, but I feel like we just need that platform to really take it to the next level. You know, ESPN is there, but the viewers are only responding to the big fight. You know, we saw it last week, you know, Haney and Cambosis drew a nice number. Shakur Stevenson has become a very, very big draw, especially when he fights guys like Oscar Valdez. But then you get back to kind of shows like, you know, I don't know how big of a number Belanga is going to do. A lot of the shows are in the A lot of the shows are in the 500,000 range. So, you know, they're not this big master platform that's going to carry the sport. Showtime is putting in their best foot forward, but you know, last week's show was, you know, they only drew like 200, maybe 220,000 that got swallowed whole by ESPN. So I love the way Fox presented the sport. I love the show, the programming. And you see Kate Abdo is like probably the best host in the sport. So she does such a great job. Sean Porter has made a nice career, you know, through Fox Sports. So it's unfortunate that they're not investing more. But yeah, we got the 4 years. I think it was 4 years from, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was 2018-19, like 3+ years. Of the deal between PBC and Fox. This final year, it just seems like it's not a time buy, but it does, we're just not seeing anything else. So, and I think that's the way it's going to be for the time being. So it's just going to be like whatever Showtime isn't interested in, it's going to spill over into Fox Sports.
And bleeding into some more like discussion type of stuff, Spence and Crawford, do you think that I believe that we see it this year. Do you believe that we see it this year?
So this time last year, I'd be like, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, I thought maybe Spence was just going to get to Ugas, then outgrow the division and move on to 154. And I probably would have been fine with that just for how long we've been waiting for Spence Crawford. The guy won 3 belts. He beat 3 different champions to win those belts too. He didn't win a vacant belt. So you know what? Let him just go to 154 and see what he can do there. But I do honestly believe that. PBC seems very optimistic of it. I've seen some very crazy stories that, like, you know, they claim there's hurdles. They don't know if Kinahan's still involved in Crawford's career. But to me, that seems like a lot of old news. Terrence Crawford can't be dumb enough to get in, you know, stay involved with a guy where, you know, you're going to pay a $2 million fine to still do business with him. So, no, I do think the fight's going to happen. I think it's just a matter of whatever deal Terrence could reach with PBC that's going to push this fight forward. I'm very optimistic that we see it in November.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Las Vegas.
Yep. In Las Vegas. Yep. All right. And then, Arturo Bia versus Joe Smith Jr. Jesus, this is like, man, it's going to be a slaughter one way or the other. Right. You have, I don't know. The only thing that worries me about Arturo Bia is, you know, he's a little stiff, right?
Yep.
You know, Joe Smith, you know, he's not, the fastest guy out. Right. But, you know, he can move a little bit. And so I don't know, like, you know, I seen Joe Smith digging up, the holes in the sand in the beach and doing all this crazy stuff, and better be with the weight butt. Like, both of these guys are preparing for war. Like, how does this fight play out?
Yeah, you nailed it, man. It's like everyone, I haven't seen anyone yet who thinks this fight's going to go to distance. That would be the upset of the year if the judges are needed in this one. It's Joe Smith, he's just one of those guys. He's always one punch away from ending a fight. That's what's going to make it dangerous. But what's going to make it dangerous for him? I mean, to get hit that many times by Arturo Beterbiev, I don't know, man. That's, you know, Joe's my boy. I usually go with Strong Island guys. So, you know, I'm going to roll with him for that very reason, but I'm not making an official prediction.
Yeah.
I did on one. Someone asked me before. I said, you know what? I don't pick against Strong Island guys. So I'm going to pick Joe Smith by knockout. But and it's conceivable. Beterbiev has been down before.
Yeah.
But the flip side to that is Joe Smith is very, very hittable.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a dangerous, it's, you know, they're both two old school guys. They have this old school approach. They're just brutal. It's like boxing porn, man.
And that crowd, I mean, you know, I don't think people realize, but, you know, Joe Smith with his union reps, right? And then Beterbiev with the Russians, like that's going to be a packed like house, and it's going to be real tense in there, you know, on Saturday night. All right. Yeah. So the, far down the road, Triple G versus Canelo 3, right? This is, I've been excited for this fight, right? Since about 2 years ago, I kept telling people, hey, when they fight, everybody's going to be really excited about this. But then, you know, people shitting on it. And I was like, what do you think? Are you as excited as I would say most people are for this third fight?
So when you put it in that context, I'm probably not even as excited about it as you are. Because I got to a point, I'm like, I just don't care about this one anymore. To me, it just feels like this is something the Zone had to do. It's unfinished business. But the flip side to that is the two times they fought, they were two fight of the year contenders. So I keep using Pacquiao Marquez as the example. Nobody asked for Pacquiao Marquez 3. And especially Marquez's one other fight at welterweight, nobody thought it was going to be remotely competitive. And guess what? It was just as competitive as the other two fights. You know, Pacquiao, to me, I thought that was the one fight that Pacquiao won, if you could say cleanly. I think I did have him winning 115, 113 in that fight, but it's the only fight of the four where I did have him winning it. So, but again, it was, you know, nobody expect, you know, Pacquiao was on this tear. He was knocking everyone out. And then all of a sudden he just, you know, Marquez just reminded him, you know what? I got you kryptonite, bro. So Gennady could still be that guy. I mean, you know, I don't put too much into it. He did exactly what he should have done against Morata. He started slow, but once he got going, there was no stopping him. And, you know, Canelo coming off a loss. I mean, you know, I'm not down on the fight. That'd be very unfair to say. Like I said, I'm not as big as like the Zone execs are on it, but I think it'll be very exciting. So actually, be at my wife's aunt and uncle's 50th wedding anniversary that night. Like, they are big boxing fans. I'm hoping someone is going to have it on, because if they do, I definitely want to watch it. And I probably will wind up at someone else's, you know, house watching it that night. But I guess, yeah, I'm glad for the people who wanted to get it done that it did get done. But yeah, it was just one of those. It was kind of like on that same plate as Spence Crawford. It was like, all right, you either do it or don't, man. So, but that's the crazy part. That's how big of a year this is, that we could very well get both of those fights.
Yeah, so. And you know, I'm looking at this fight, right? And outside of, you know, just the fight itself, from a business perspective, this fight makes all the sense in the world. You know, these guys, both have like Fortune 500 companies backing them. You know, they want to have both of their faces on those posters, you know, with those big companies that are going to spend a gazillion dollars, you know, with ads and all that. So I just feel like when it comes to the business of boxing, this is like the biggest business fight that could happen, you know, between these two guys.
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. I know that's been the big debate is like, is this fight bigger than Spence Crawford? Look, Spence Crawford is definitely a much, much, much bigger fight against guys like us, against hardcore boxing fans, you know, the true boxing fans, and even, you know, some mainstream boxing fans that follow the sport far more than, you know, casual fans. But for those who like, they only know a handful of names, yes, Gennady, you know, Canelo and Triple G, that's the fight they're going to want to see. People keep, oh, well, you know, people probably haven't seen Triple G since the second fight. They're not going to care. They're going to hear these two names and they're going to want to watch. Same reason, like nobody knew what Mike Tyson and Roy Jones have been up to for, you know, decades, but 1.6 million people bought the damn show. You know, that's so it's like I said, when you put these two names together, it's going to attract attention. So that fight will attract more attention than Spence Crawford. But I mean, in my opinion, I think Spence Crawford is the much bigger fight. That's the fight that does far more for the future of the sport than, you know, like as I keep saying, Canelo Triple G 3 is just unfinished business. Spence Crawford is like that's pound for pound supremacy.
Absolutely. And now, and then I caught a lot of flack with this along those same lines. I said that Gervonta Davis versus Ryan Garcia is one of the biggest fights in boxing, period. Like, because of their drawing power from two distinct different universes that they have, they are going to do a huge number. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's not bigger than Spence Crawford. Outside of the hardcore fans,
right.
And when you start talking about casuals, you start talking about all these big companies that have all these deep pockets. Davis versus Ryan Garcia is the mega fight.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, you know, the people who are making these arguments too, they have to realize it's like what they want out of the sport is not the same thing why celebrities are paying attention to the sport. I mean, look at the people that went to, you know, Tank and Rolando. And look, Rolly talked up a good game, but that was the Gervonta Tank Davis show. That was the one pay-per-view where he absolutely sold on his own. I mean, he did it against Isak Cruz as well, but that pay-per-view just didn't track very well. You know, it drew a nice crowd, but it didn't track well. But this was like an event. I mean, I know Triller did a show at Barclays, but we don't count that. This was the first real show at Barclays since the pandemic, as far as I'm concerned. And it was the Gervonta Tank Davis show all the way through. And he did it really without even, you know, Floyd wasn't even involved in the show at all. You know, he was out doing his own thing. I still don't think he mentioned the fight at all. I know they said he wasn't there due to a family emergency. That's neither here nor there. But that's the thing that I got out of it, that Tank proved that he can do business with Mayweather, coexist, you know, with that family without having to deal directly with Floyd. So even if there is a conflict there, they can still do business moving forward. Leonard Ellerbe has proven he can run that company, that Floyd doesn't have to be there 24/7. And I've always felt like, you know, Floyd, anytime he is there, he always went out of his way to take away some of the shine from Tank anyway. So, you know, Tank gets to have these moments. He is a legitimate star. And people could, like, I would say, like, if Tank fought Devin Haney next, it would be, it would do better than any pay-per-view he's done. It wouldn't do necessarily big blockbuster business. If Devin Haney fought Ryan Garcia next, you know, it would, again, same scenario. But Tank and Ryan, when you put them together, that is, I'm with you, man. That's the big mega fight to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Jake, we covered a lot of different things here. I'll end it with the Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend. And
that I won't be there for, man.
That we won't be there for, but there's a show on there, and Edgar Berlanga is fighting against Angulo. You know, I still don't know about Edgar Berlanga. You know, I'm still trying to figure out where he's at. I don't think he can afford another decision victory, because then it's the repackaging is going to take a lot longer. And I think that Xander, you know, has that more of the organic following than he does. And there was a lot of people that were looking forward to that young kid fighting that night, and more than they were against Berlanga. Do you see, even if Berlanga wins by knockout, are you getting the sense that the Hispanic community is, especially in New York, are receiving Berlanga more than what they're trying to like push on us?
It's an interesting question to ask. I do think I've seen him, when he went to Florida last year, he sold that place almost by himself. granted, those guys, you know, the other guys on the card, they did bring fans, but like Belanga sold every single four seat. This is like, you know, 1,000 miles from home. So granted, you know, Kissimmee, it's like little, you know, it's little San Juan down there. Yeah, I mean, he was a star down there. I do think he's a legit box office attraction. So I don't know if it's whether just specifically the Boricuas or he does, you know, Fat Joe's done a lot to, you know, draw some attention to him. Tracy Morgan's big on him. So I also think his, you know, good friend, Pretty Boy Pablo, he helped out Pablo Valdez. So he has the right following. I get what you're saying about Xander. I do think Xander is going to be a future star. I hate it. You know, I know he wanted to be on the show. The good news is he's young enough where he'll probably headline the next top ranked show on the eve of Puerto Rican Day Parade. I'm glad that they got this tradition back. I think there is something to Belanga's star appeal, but he's another, you know, kind of like Jaime Munguia. He's stuck in this holding pattern. You know, the difference is Munguia seems to have the talent where he could compete and possibly win another divisional title. We're not there yet with Belanga. I mean, he was a lot of people's pick for a 2020 prospect of the year. I think boxing team ended up voting for him as well, just because there wasn't a lot to choose from with the pandemic. But I just can't say, like, even if he knocks out Angulo, it's like, oh, he's going to go fight, you know, like he's going to fight Canelo next or fight David Benavidez. You know, I don't even know if he'd be ready for, you know, Caleb Plant or even Anthony Durrell next. So he's just not at that level where he's ready to advance from prospect to contender. I think that's the bigger issue. And I think that's where fans are going to start losing interest, you know, especially with the fight like he had the last one, he absolutely can't have again. Like if he goes out, he knocks down Angulo 6 or 7 times, like he did, you know, with Damon Nicholls, I think he knocked him down 4 times in that fight. Like people weren't mad that it went the distance because he still like, he still acted like the monster that night. So that's the type of performance we need, even if we get just a complete 12 round beatdown, but it can't be anything like it was last fight. It can't be like it was against Posadas, you know? And again, it's like, once he wins, there are going to be hard questions. Yes. Okay. Well, you got it. Maybe you're back, but what's next, bro? So that's going to be telling, but this event, it is selling a lot better than people are giving it credit for. They made it, you know, I know they sold some tickets, a lot of resale tickets went back on the market, but that's still money in the bank. So you know, Top Rank isn't disappointed with the gate that's going to come this weekend. But again, you know, the bloom is pretty much off the rose with his career. So I think that his problem is going to be more so moving forward than, you know, what just this weekend.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that you mentioned Anthony Durrell, I've always felt that that was going to be the fight if they were to, you know, to make it sometime soon, that was going to be like, okay, what do we really have, you know, with Berlanga? Because Durrell, you know, he's going to make it ugly in there and he's going to really push you to your boundaries, you know, both mentally and physically. So I think that if they can still make that fight, you know, before he turns 40, then, yeah, you know, then it'll be good. But all right, Jake, listen, I appreciate your time. We covered a whole bunch of different stuff. You know, I know you're a busy person. And so I definitely appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, nah, thanks, man. It's a long overdue pleasure to finally be on the show. And I look forward to many more appearances if you have me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. The Boxing Rush Hour Show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.